Radio.
This talk was presented by Christian Stevens on the topic, The Masculine Spirit, and was recorded at the Eyewitness Conference 2012 in Stanwell Tops, New South Wales.
Gents, it's very humbling for me to be talking to you guys this morning about this topic. As you know yourself, we've seen plenty of great examples of masculinity over the weekend in various ways and forms. I think maybe one of the differences between everyone we've heard from so far and myself is you'll see that there's this name tag here. So I'm very much one of you guys. Your generation, been with you in the groups, been at Eyewitness each occasion. So if you take anything away from the fact that's me up here, please let it be that we are the next generation that is moving forward. Already you would know friends that are starting to become fathers and husbands. So it's not too long before we have full hold of the baton in the church and we're passing it on. Now I want to start by pointing out, or asking more like it, what does a man look like? What does a man look like? Now, I've been thinking about it, and I think that our popular culture puts forward two models for manhood. They're completely contradictory. If they're in the same room as each other, they would tear shreds off each other. But they seem to be equally put forward as what it means to be a man. Because everyone in this room has an idea of what manhood is. Otherwise, you wouldn't know what to do when you get up in the morning. You've got an idea of what you want to be, what you want to achieve as a man. Okay, so what I want to try and do in this first 5 minutes, we don't have long this morning, we've only got about 25 minutes, is I want to plant some seeds and see if I can bring to you, to your mind, what it is your idea of masculinity is. Because only once you bring that idea to the front can you really start to think about it. And then from there, change your direction. So the first option which I think our popular culture puts forward is the Homer Simpson Al Bundy demo. Okay, everyone knows who Al Bundy is? Al Bundy's the husband from Married with Children. Sitting there in the couch with his beer gut hanging out, forking over the money behind him to his wife and kids as they're coming while he's grumbling about them and just wants to be left alone and watch TV. Now, there are key aspects of this model. You'll find this model a lot in the media, and there are some key aspects about it. First of all, to be masculine is to hate what you do for work. You go there and you rock up for the money. Okay, so think of your Homer Simpson, a lot of other characters who are completely incompetent at what they do, but are rocking up just to get money and bring it back. That serves the role of work in your life. And really, when you look at these people, they're not really experts at anything. They're a bit of a joke. A lot of this kind of masculinity portrayed in the media, you can't take seriously. It's the person, when they try to assert themselves, they just make a fool of themselves. So they're less embarrassing when they're just not trying to assert themselves. They can be a leader in no way, shape or form. It's just embarrassing. You've got the children or the wife that are constantly there to correct them and think, oh, poor dad, he can't see this. You know, this is starting to take shape of our first idea of popular culture masculinity. The second aspect is you want to be left alone. You can't imagine a better life than watching TV and sitting at the pub. But these external things just keep interrupting you wanting to live your dream life of being on the couch or at the pub. And so you've constantly got to distract yourself from a happy life to go and deal with these other people who just happens to be my wife or kids or my friends. Avoiding hassle is the key to happiness in this understanding of masculinity. Avoiding hassle is the key to happiness. Another aspect of this kind of masculinity is to be a man is to not take anything seriously. Dr. Tilly touched on this very well when he spoke about immaturity yesterday. To be a man is to shrug it off, to say, I don't care, doesn't matter. If you let it bother you, oh, then you're a sissy, you're failing as a man. A real man is able just to shrug it off, yeah, whatever. Regardless of what happens. You change the channel or you crack open another beer, but either way, you move forward. You don't get stuck at something. Another aspect of this masculinity is to be completely emotionally incompetent. If someone asks you how you feel, well, that's a sign that they've already off the rails. If they're asking you how you feel, you're not paying them for a counseling session. So let's just move on to the next question. You're not supposed to be aware of being sad, or say, for example, crying if a tragedy happens. If you cry, you have failed as a man. You just need to be tough, hard enough. It's like a patient walking into a doctor's office, and the doctor tells the patient, get better. What's wrong with you? Get better. See ya. A lot of the time, this is the idea of masculinity that we were brought up with. Whether it's come through our fathers or grandfathers, there's this idea of just toughen up and let me know when you get back. And so you kind of, well, what does that mean? What you will most likely take out of it is it's wrong to care about things. Because when you care, you open yourself up to get hurt. So the way to protect yourself is to pretend you don't care about things anymore. And the final one about this idea of masculinity is you don't care how you look. If you don't have a beer gut, you've done something wrong. Or maybe you're not married yet. But either way, it's not about looking after yourself. Anyone who is trying to stay in shape, well, next thing you know, you'll be wearing skinny jeans and shaving your legs. And that's not what a man does. Okay? So this wraps up our first idea of masculinity. Now, that's someone who the culture kind of draws you in. That's the easy way. You know, that's kind of like society saying, if you want a model of manhood, these guys are the easy way to go. These are the hassle-free. But then some people will think, no, I don't want to be like these hobos. I want to hit the big time as a man. And so society says, oh, you want to hit the big time as a man. You want to be a man. So then society presents to us the Conan the Barbarian, James Bond, the Godfather, these style characters. Okay. Now, if James Bond was in the same room as Homer Simpson, he would say, you disgust me. You call yourself a man. You know. Now, Homer would probably look back at James Bond and think, you just got to relax, you take things too seriously. But notice how these are very contrasting ideas of manhood, but society puts both together. Now, James Bond laughs at Homer and Al Bundy for hating their work, because when he doesn't like his work, he tells his boss to get stuffed and gets paid millions anyway to do whatever he wants. Has everyone seen the last James Bond movie? Has he ever done what he's been told to do? And where does he get this money from? It's like he just go, oh, I don't want to do this, get stuffed. And all of a sudden, it's like he's still got this infinite bank account that we're not sure about. And there's never any repercussions for not doing what your boss says. This is the James Bond style of masculinity. You never do anything you don't want to do. Never. To do that is to fold your cards, is not to be a man. James Bond thinks Homer Simpson's pathetic because he's not good at anything, but real men are good at everything. Everything. James Bond will fly a helicopter while he's fighting off an ex-marine turned terrorist, land on a moving car, then get home to cook a breakfast that looks like MasterChef. And so if you in this view of masculinity, if you're not good at everything, you've failed as a man. You mean you can't do this? What? No, you can't change a tire? Never ever say that. Well, what happens if the tire blows one day? You work it out, but you never ever say you don't know how to change a tire. This is this idea of masculinity. It's weak to show that you can't do something. Where Homer and Al are happy to pretend, these guys actually want to be the best at everything. To fail to be the best at everything is to fail to be a man. Now, James Bond laughs at Al Bundy for complaining about the only wife he has and talking about how his wife is like this ball and chain. James Bond doesn't have time to complain between all the women he's sleeping with. He doesn't have time to complain. Who's seen the last James Bond movie? He walks into a shower naked with a woman that he knew for 5 minutes at the casino, and she doesn't even turn around to see who it is. It's almost like, what took you so long? And so James Bond is constantly moving through women. He's constantly moving through them. You never see James Bond hang around to cop a serve. He's long gone before that ever happens. So to be a man is to prove yourself by giving away things like virginity, by taking women, putting notches in your belt. That's how you prove you're a man. We've been hit by that hard. We're the American Pie generation. So in a time where a lot of the normal male initiations were shifted off to the side, suddenly you had a lot of boys growing up thinking, well, how do I know when I'm a man? You know, a lot of other cultures have something where the boy heads off with the men, something happens, they come back a man. Now you're expected to act like a man. Whereas our culture's kind of blurred that whole line. So people start inventing ways in their own mind how I can prove to my mates that I'm a man. Sleeping with women tends to get close to the top of the list. And until you've done that, you're the 40-year-old version. You're the person that's just the laughing stock of all your friends who are the real men. And until you do that, it's a shameful thing. Okay, this is all tied in with the James Bond masculinity. Now, I mentioned that as well. James Bond would never put up with people giving him rubbish. He would have given Ned Flanders a roundhouse kick, or the Godfather would have blown up his car years and years ago. So to be a man is to not put up with anyone disagreeing with you in any shape or form. If someone disagrees with you, they're disrespecting you. If they don't do what you say, they're disrespecting you. They're challenging you. They're challenging your manhood. So the only way for you to prove that you're a man is to get them to do what you want. Now notice how contrasting that is to our Homer Simpson, our Bundy. But notice how our culture puts forward both together and doesn't expect people to pick up the complete opposite tension between these characters. Finally, James Bond laughs at Homer and these other men for not being in touch with their feelings. James Bond's in touch with his feelings. That's why he bashes people. Because to not bash people and have sex with all these women would be to repress your emotions. And that would be an unhealthy mental state to be in. So you have to express all the time what you want to do and say. Finally, you have to look like a Greek Adonis. Now, even though you've never been spotted dieting or doing a workout at any time, you walk around looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And if you don't wear skinny jeans and shave your legs, you're a disgrace. Okay? See the contrast between these two ideas of masculinity. Now, there's no doubt that each of you can see something wrong with each of these views, but maybe you can't quite put your finger on what it is. But all of us can guarantee we've heard these characters before. We've heard someone tell us to be a man is to do one of these aspects. And in your mind, you took them more or less seriously. And maybe it's because there just wasn't an alternative. So what I want to do is pause here for a second. We're going to come back to analyze these two views of masculinity. But first, I think for us to be able to properly recognize the counterfeit, we have to know what the real thing is. Okay? If all you're ever exposed to is counterfeit money notes, you might know it's a counterfeit, but until you come across the real thing, you might not be sure about what aspect of it is fake. Okay? The best way to pick up all the counterfeits is to get ultra familiar with the real thing. Okay? That's why, believe it or not, people who are experts in pointing out fake notes are actually extremely familiar with real notes. They spend a lot of time holding real notes, flicking them, getting a feel for it. If they only ever spent their time touching counterfeits, when a new counterfeit comes along, they get sucked in. And we're a bit like that with masculinity sometimes. We reject the counterfeit because we see, oh, this is rubbish. But then we just move to the next one, which comes out, the next masculinity on the market. So I want to look at what we might say is the formula for masculinity. Okay, this is a huge topic. We've only got about another 15 minutes. So I'm just going to do a hit and run on you guys. I'm going to plant some seeds, plant some ideas, give you things to think about. Now, over the weekend, we've looked at the seven main sacraments. Okay, these are our guaranteed sources and symbols of grace. Okay, but in theology, there's another understanding of sacraments, which you might call sacramentals or sacramentality. And what that means is that everything which God creates reflects something about Him. And all of us know this instinctually. When you see a beautiful sunset, like we saw over the cliffs here, it made you think, that's a beautiful sunset. How amazing is God? Notice how you draw the line. And that backfires because when something goes wrong, you draw the same connection to God without thinking about it. Why did God do this to me? Or God must hate me. But we have this sense of what I see in the world around me reflects something about God. And all of the physical universe represents this. Okay, so in the physical universe, the sun is the source of all light. In the spiritual universe, the sun is the source of all light. This is what we call the sacramentality of creation. So the question is, can we say there's a sacramentality of masculinity? Can we say there's something about masculinity that reflects God particularly? Because if there is, to know that is to know what it means to be a true man. And we can then start to align our radar up with trying to get to that point. Because you've got to remember this whole time, manhood is what you are, man is what you are, but it's also a goal you're trying to achieve. You are all in this room human, but you're trying to achieve the fullness of your humanity. Okay, so we need to have an idea of where we want to get to as well. Now, the verse which I'm going to propose this time around as our formula for masculinity might be surprising for some of you. Have a guess. If you guys were going to say, what verse in the Bible do you think would be a formula for what a man is? What are some that you think you'd look for? Now, I'm going to go back to the beginning. And it's a verse which is found right after the creation of Eve. Okay? And it comes right at the moment where Adam recognizes that in Eve is another human being like himself. You know the famous line, at last, flesh of my flesh, bone of my bone. So he recognizes that there's a complementarity to humanity. Then God says this, and this is what we'll take as our verse. Therefore, a man leaves his father and his mother and cleaves to his wife, and they become one flesh. I'll say that a couple more times. Therefore, a man leaves his father and his mother and cleaves to his wife, and they become one flesh. Now, I'm going to propose that this is the description of masculinity. Two aspects of this, which we'll speak about, are to be masculine is to initiate or to leave your comfort zone. The second aspect is to be masculine is to commit and protect. These are the two halves of that verse. Let me read it again and see if you can see it. Therefore, a man leaves his father and mother and cleaves to his wife, and they become one flesh. Now, you could unpack this for years. We've got 4 minutes. So, now, as a model for this, we could take a number of figures, heaps of figures, in various ways. But we'll stick to Jesus for this time around, because that statement in Genesis is talking just as much about Jesus as it is Adam. It would be a mistake to think that only applies to Adam. Because remember, after the fall, Adam doesn't represent masculinity perfectly. All of us here are tinted, we got little dints in our masculinity. If someone was to say, behold the pinnacle of masculinity, and you had to stand up and give a talk on masculinity, not that I know what that's like, then you'll find that it's a very... inadequate description for your own failings as a man and your own attempt to get to where you know you should be. But Jesus doesn't suffer from this. So to look to him is to find out what that Genesis verse means, because he is man without sin. Jesus is the ultimate initiator. He initiated our creation and he initiated our redemption. In both of those things, we had nothing to do with getting the ball rolling. Now, part of being an initiator is leaving the comfort zone. Jesus is the ultimate leaver of the comfort zone because he is the one who left heaven, left his homeland, left his comfort zone, sent by the Father. Okay? So he fulfills that first aspect of masculinity. He doesn't stay in where he's comfortable or where the homeland is. What I want you to think about now is, as we're going through this, I should have mentioned this earlier. Why did God incarnate himself as a man? Was it a 50-50 bet? You know, was it a coin toss up in heaven, male, female? Wonder what's going to happen? Why a man? Maybe as we're looking at these things and we find out eventually what true masculinity lies around, we'll see that really he couldn't have been anything else but a man. In fact, you might say masculinity was created to represent what God would do. Okay? Now, how does Jesus unite to his wife and become one flesh? So this is the second part of that verse. First of all, he does this by the incarnation, by permanently uniting himself to human nature. Think about what that means. That means for all of eternity from now on, creation is united to God unrevocably. If God was to go on to create 50,000 other complete and utter universes, and we were to spend heaven watching him do this, for all of these other universes, the second person of the Trinity has a human nature. If God was to reveal himself to these other universes and appear to them, he would look like you. Now that's commitment. Okay? That is uniting to his wife. God in the Old Testament is constantly referring to himself as the groom of Israel, his bride. Jesus calls himself the groom. Now this upset some of the Jews because they knew what he was saying. To refer to yourself as the groom of Israel is to claim to be God. Okay? Now he goes on to lay down his life for his bride, St. Paul tells us, the church. Okay? So that the union they have now constantly gives life, new life, to all of us. Now the second aspect of uniting, of being a committer, is to be a protector. Jesus is the ultimate protector because he is the ultimate committer. If you ever think that there is a way to protect anything or anyone without some sense of commitment and sacrifice, you're completely kidding yourself. Because to only protect and commit as long as you feel like it is just a very fancy cover for your own selfishness. You might get praises heaped on you from the outside for doing what you did, but as long as you only do it when it suits you, then eventually one day your protection will fail. St. Paul tells us, what can separate us from the love of Christ? See, he's the ultimate protector for all time because he has made the ultimate commitment. What can separate us from the love of Christ? Jesus says, do not be afraid, I am with you to the end of time. Now, why are those words comforting? Can you separate the comfort of those words from the commitment of those words? You know, say Jesus said, I will be with you until some point of time in the future. I'm not sure when. All of a sudden, you're like, well, is Jesus still not looking after us? What's going on around here? And you're not sure. You know, like take those wedding vows. If it's not till death do us part, if it's till you know, till things get tough, well then, it's always on rocky ground. There's something about those wedding vows, it's something about the commitment they entail which makes them the ultimate protection. Now let's come back and wrap up with Homer Simpson and Al Bundy. Keep in mind our motto of manhood. The man shall leave his father and mother, unite to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Now the problem with Homer Simpson and Al Bundy, what's not clicking when you hear about this idea of masculinity? They never initiate. Think about that. They never leave their comfort zone. All they want to do is be left alone in their comfort zone. And that's where you recognize the deficiency in their masculinity. They hang around. No one can accuse Homer Simpson and Al Bundy of not being around the house enough, but they do nothing. They do nothing. And that's an opposite problem to what we'll see in our culture's second solution. But for this first one, the problem is there's no initiating. There's no leaving the comfort zone. Now, the two great symptoms that you've fallen into this yourself is, first of all, you're bored. You're bored. There's just nothing going on. That's the ultimate sign that you've hung up your initiator hat. And you sit back and you're like, I'm waiting for things. Well, can't something happen? Oh, you're missing out. You're missing out. And as rich as the world is, to never initiate, to never leave your comfort zone, to never leave father and mother, using our metaphorical language here, is to become bored as a man, because that's not what you're made to do. Boredom is a classic sign that you're created for something greater than is currently going on. Now, the second symptom of this is feeling like you've failed as a man. Nothing hurts your view of your own masculinity when you fail to initiate or leave your comfort zone. Let me give you an example. Say, this is a true story. This happened to my little brother. He was on the bus coming home from school, and these bunch of kids 4 years older than him are picking on a dyslexic boy in the bus. Can you imagine that? Picking on a dyslexic boy on the bus. Now, he sees this is wrong. Something is wrong. But he knows right now, where is he? He's in the comfort zone. He's safe. To leave your comfort zone, to get involved in the battle, is to not be sure of how it's going to end. He didn't get up and he didn't say anything. He come home crying his eyes out. Now, no one picked on him, but why was he upset? Because he knew he felt called to do something and he didn't do it. So because of that, his view of himself has lowered. Courage is not an optional aspect of masculinity. It's at the front and center. And you know that when you don't initiate, when you don't leave your comfort zone, you feel like something wrong has happened. The second one, say you're out at a fine dining and wining establishment, otherwise known as a pub, and you notice that, you know what, I don't know what it is, and I'm not going to try and explain it, but there's something about that woman over there, I'd like to get to know her. Okay, you would like to get to know her. So notice you find yourself with the desire to go over there. You find yourself with the desire to go over there. But where are you now? You're in the comfort zone. You can't get rejected over here. How can you get rejected over here? If she was to walk over and try and pick you up, you're in the comfort zone and you can do that. And look like in front of your friends like you own the place. You know, because you're in the comfort zone, you never left. Okay? So part of you wants to initiate, to leave the comfort zone, to leave, using our biblical language, your father and mother, and make the epic trek across the dance floor into the unknown. And when you do that, you open yourself up for all kinds of very funny yet embarrassing moments. She's with her friends, she's got all the power. You're over there on your own. Now, if you rock up with all your mates, rock up 10 at a time and get around them, hey, how you going? Notice how it's intimidating for them, but you notice how you never left the comfort zone. You never left. You buckled and brought everyone with you, and you try to bring your entire comfort zone and drop it on theirs. You know, and this is the way, you know, this is the way that people try and go about avoiding leaving the comfort zone. Okay, now say you don't go over there and say something. How do you feel on the way home? Are you like, I'm just so glad that I will never get to know that woman? You're not, you're wishing you went over and said something, and you know the reason you didn't was you're afraid of rejection or embarrassment or what will she do, what won't she do? And so you didn't go over there, and there's this little scar on your masculinity saying, didn't go over and talk to her. You know, and when that happens, you get tempted to start defining masculinity as the Homer Simpson Al Bundy. Not because you think it's true masculinity, but because you're going in that direction. Now, how does our James Bond, Conan the Barbarian man fail? Well, they don't suffer from this problem. They're always initiating. You know, you don't see James Bond, the start opening scene of James Bond like this. And he's got this beer gut hanging out and he's watching TV. He's always jumping over rooftops for no apparent reason. It's like we're going to start this James Bond movie in the middle of him bashing somebody because, well, you know, that's what he does. We're just going to follow from here on in because we think it's going to be for a purpose now. Or when he was chilling out in the latest James Bond movie, if you've seen it, when he's chilling out, taking time off work, he's just hanging out in the Caribbean, sleeping with beautiful women, at pubs throwing $100 notes over the bar and making his own drinks. He's never doing nothing. You won't hear James Bond say, I'm bored. So that's not his problem. What's his problem is he never cleaves to his wife and becomes one flesh. He never commits. That's his problem. He's always doing something, but it's never with the purpose of uniting to what he loves. It's never to the purpose of committing to what he loves. And because he doesn't do that, James Bond is only an imitation protector. He walks around with a gun, but he's not a protector. He is more like the predators that he is hunting. He's one of them. He's not the protector. Remember what we said. There is no real protection without some kind of commitment. Any attempt to protect without a willingness to commit or sacrifice is a disguise for his own adrenaline rush. And you piece this together through the movie. You're like, is James Bond really a hero? Or is he a boy with a messed up childhood who can't sit still? Because there's got to be a big difference between them, right? Now, how can we expect, over there, I don't know what the women are talking about. I don't know what they're trying to work out. They're probably 20 minutes into dealing with this one ex-boyfriend, why he didn't call her back. I don't know. But what can we expect our women to start doing if this is our culture of masculinity? In other words, if there's only Homer Simpsons and James Bonds walking around, how does that affect their view of femininity? How can we expect them to start acting? First of all, if they've lost men's faith in ability to protect them, they will start protecting themselves. How do they do that these days? Contraception on tap, abortion on demand. This is their way of protecting themselves against men who are now predators. Men who can't protect women from themselves. See, sometimes you'll find that the person you need to protect the woman you love from is you. You have to say, I have to get up now. It was a good night. You know, I'll take you home. You have to protect them from yourself. If you don't, you've become the predator. You force her to have to protect herself. You force her to have to say no. See how you've put the onus on them to protect themselves. And if they don't have the courage to say no, where is it going to end? Where is it going to end? Now, a lot of these predators, women might be married to them. How do I protect myself from this? See what I mean? The reason why it's an ironic thing. One of the big pushes for contraception was the belief that it would lower the need for abortion. But everyone here knows what it's done. The proof's in the pudding. Abortion has gone like this. Okay? And it's being instilled there by the law as a woman's last chance to protect herself from being utterly committed for the rest of her life to something she didn't want to do. But she either gave in because she failed to have the courage to say no, or she was under the thumb from a man who was a predator rather than a protector. And now he's gone. Now he's gone. And society says, don't go back to him. You're going to ask the guy that knocked you up whether to get an abortion? Are you sick in the head? This is the guy that did this to you. Make your decision on your own. Now, what happens when you isolate people from all their support and ask them to make decisions? They'll probably make decisions that they wouldn't make if they had support. If they were surrounded by men, protectors, not predators, their decisions would be different. Finally, it would mean that the men surrounding them either aren't initiators, or if they are initiators, it's not to commit and love them. It's to get something in return. Okay? Who knows the Beyoncé Independent Woman song? This has become an anthem. Independent woman, independent woman. Now, the only reason this would become so popular is because to not be an independent woman is to depend on a man, and to depend on a man is to owe him something. See the logic? To depend on a man is to owe him something. It means that he only initiates and wants something in return. Hey, I'm bringing the bread home. Now it's my turn over here. And scares the daylights out of women. So the way they see to protect themselves from that is to be independent materially. Have your own income. Don't get drawn into this traditional hierarchical family stuff. You'll eventually get cornered into owing someone something. But popular culture is not completely lost. Like in the media, we could have used great examples of manhood. Mr. Anderson in The Matrix, going from this ignorant guy in his comfort zone, we see his character change to eventually becoming the person who lays down his life for the truth. Batman Begins, Bruce Wayne starts off as this selfish, self-centered, angry boy. And we see Dark Knight Rises. He matures as a man to realize what he has to do to save the people he loves, Gotham. One last word, masculinity, the church, and the gates of hell. I've got to cut out a bit here because we've got a jet. Everyone knows that passage, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail. Now, most of the time when you read this, I bet you're thinking of Satan just kicking the daylights out of the church, and the church is just hanging in there. You know, Satan, he's not going to win. Have you ever attacked anyone with gates before? Have you ever seen, look, this guy coming down the street with a gate, everyone get out of the way? You don't attack people with gates. What's the purpose of gates? To keep people out. And Jesus is saying that the gates won't hold out the church. We're kicking these bloody things in. But if the men of the church, if what happens when we get testosterone and the gospel and put it together, if that doesn't work, then the men of the church fail to be initiators, which means we can't evangelize. Because to evangelize is to leave your comfort zone. It means we can't have fathers and husbands because that requires commitment and sacrifice. And so the church without her men becomes a disabled body, like it would without its true femininity. But especially evangelization suffers without her men. Okay, so my challenge to you guys is, We're not here for long, so give the gates a good kick while you're here. But keep that model in your mind and think of those two aspects of masculinity. And I guarantee you that when you move towards those things, you'll find that you are the man that you wish you could be, and you are the man that represents Christ himself. So thanks for listening, guys.
For more talks recorded at Eyewitness 2012, visit cradio.org.au or xt3.com. To find out more about the Eyewitness Conference, visit lifetothefull.com.au. Cradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.